Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode number 60. Thank you as always for downloading and subscribing to our podcast, and podcast at sightandsound.co.uk is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you. And coming up on today's show, access to Braille music. A new level of access is about to be revealed thanks to a really exciting project by the DAISY Consortium. Dr. Sarah Morley-Wilkins will be joining me in a couple of minutes to tell us more. Stay right where you are. You do not want to miss it. Well, I do hope everybody's keeping well. We're experiencing the start of another heat wave here on the east coast of Ireland, and I think it's going to be something similar right across the UK as well. So wherever you may be listening to this show, I hope you're staying well and enjoying the heat and drinking plenty of water, I suppose, is the thing, isn't it? I dug out my old water bottle from our office the other day. We were moving office, and I dug out my water bottle and I started using it again, because you do need to keep the old hydration levels, I suppose, up to speed in this type of weather. Now, as we publish this show, it's the 9th of August as I'm publishing this podcast. And I just want to give a quick mention that on the 10th of August, so if you're listening to this today on the 9th of August, or if you're even listening early on the morning of the 10th, we're hosting a very special webinar to pay tribute to Eric Damery. And if you're aware of Jaws and Vispero and all the stuff that goes on there, you'll know of Eric Damery, who's been for many, many years vice president of software product management at Vispero. He's really been the guy who has been instrumental in guiding the Jaws screen reader to where it is today, and the many, many, many features that exist, not just in Jaws, by the way, but in screen readers in general. I was reading a really interesting article by Chris Hofstadter a couple of weeks ago on his blog. And of course, Chris Hofstadter is well known within the assistive technology industry. He's a guy we'll get on this show, actually. But he was saying that basically everybody who uses screen reading technology now, that technology, to some degree, has been influenced by Eric Damery. And, you know, if you use, for example, VoiceOver on iOS, or if you're using TalkBack on Android, or if you're using NVDA, the functionality in Jaws and the techniques that are implied, I suppose, or employed, is the correct word there, by Jaws, have been to some degree influenced by Eric Damery's in-depth understanding of what screen reader users needed. And it was, you know, really interesting to watch Eric operate in a world with screen reader users. He could use Jaws. I would go out on a limb here and say better than most screen reader users I've ever seen using Jaws. And I include myself in that, by the way. He had a unique understanding, I think, as to the needs of screen reader users. So on the 10th of August at 2 p.m., here in Ireland and the UK, we have a very special webinar event to wish Eric well. And just, you know, we'd love people to come along and say anything you want. You might have a funny story. You might have, you know, when did you meet Eric? Going to some of Eric's legendary events. I remember when Eric came to Ireland about 6 years ago, I think, the first time, and we had a packed room at the NCBI in Dublin, and much, much busier than we thought it was going to be. So come along on the 10th of August. All the information at sightandsound.co.uk, where you can register for the event. We'd love to see people coming along to wish Eric well at 2 p.m. on the 10th. Uh, access to Braille music has always been a little bit sporadic, and access to Braille music when you throw technology into the mix can sometimes be a little complex. I've been a Braille music user for many years, and I know lots of people who have struggle to get music when they need it, but they also struggle to find a solution that will allow them to compose and arrange music in an accessible manner and share that music with their sighted peers. Well, the DAISY Consortium have embarked on a really exciting project, one that I've been watching for a little while now, that will answer a lot of challenges for transcribers, music publishers, and end users. The person coordinating and managing that project is Dr. Sarah Morley-Wilkins, and she joins us on the show today. And Sarah, we're absolutely delighted that you've taken the time to join us, so thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to talk to you.
We will talk all about the project in just a sec, but just to put this into context, you go right back in the world of tactile diagrams for a while, don't you? And tactile touch, I suppose, let's say. We were just chatting off air about your Exploring Windows 95 series, which is a long time ago, but some people may remember that.
It was, and that was a long time ago in my career. I just finished university as a psychologist, and ended up on some research projects at the University of Hertfordshire, looking at, I think it was Braille on medicine packaging, the tactile danger warning triangle on products like bleach and stuff like that. And then that turned into working on a European project looking at how Windows screen readers should be built, because that was the time when DOS was moving into Windows and people were very concerned, quite rightly, about how blind people are going to continue accessing their jobs and their education with this new very visual operating system. So as part of the usability work I was doing, I realised I had to tell blind people what this new interface looked like and how it worked, because it was so visual, of course, designed to be looked at in an entirety and make sense to people who could see it. The only way really to do that was to illustrate it with some tactile diagrams. So we started off with very low tech things using fuzzy felt. And for anybody, there are lots of people here who took part in those very early evaluations of Windows screen readers with me. And they'll remember my handmade fuzzy felt drawings where I lift off menus and dialogue boxes and show them the difference between checkboxes and radio buttons. So I've always been particularly interested in how people use things and how things should be designed to suit them. And it's sort of being an intermediary between the user and the technology developers, trying to make things work better.
Okay. And those tactile diagrams, and I remember working at the time, I was just pretty much starting my own career and doing some technology training with people. And they really brought it to life for people, especially, I think, Sarah, for people who had maybe lost their vision recently.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case for most people. I think if you'd had some vision and you kind of knew some of these concepts, like a drop-down menu or a dialogue box, it was easier for people to see an illustration under their fingers and then picture it in their mind's eye. But I have to say, it doesn't work for everybody, because unless somebody is taught how to read a tactile graphic, a bit like how to read Braille or how to read maths Braille, that it's not going to be innate understanding for people. So there's always an element of being able to teach people about how to use whatever we're showing them. For sighted people too, they wouldn't know how to read a map unless we taught them map reading skills.
Right, right. And sometimes, of course, because what happens to me is people say to me, oh, there's a map, what do you think of that? And I feel almost bad when I can't read it, because they're so excited on my behalf. it's interesting to hear you. And I feel a lot better after talking to you about that, by the way.
Should. And also, a lot of the diagrams we produced at the National Centre for Tactile Diagrams and at RNIB, we always produced a kind of narrative description of what it was showing and how to use it, because complex things like three-dimensional slices through objects that you wouldn't have ever come across before, or maps of underground stations, for example, there's no reason anyone should know those things without some guidance. So mostly what we were doing was creating these audio descriptions of the maps, so or the diagrams, so that as you went round them, you kind of understood how it fitted together and what you were looking at under your fingers.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. So listen, let's fast forward to where you are now, or at least where you've been in the last few years. How did you, had you always got an interest in Braille music, or were you aware that it was a very maybe segmented area of Braille?
I knew it was a very specialist niche area, and I happened to be lucky enough to know some of the world's experts in music Braille. But actually, it wasn't. I was asked to run the project by the Norwegian Library of the Blind, who recognised that as a small organisation trying to serve blind clients in Norway, they didn't really have enough expertise to run a music Braille service. So they were trying to talk to other agencies about what they did and how things were going for them. And it became clear to them that 3 or 4 years ago, they were losing a lot of skilled expertise through retirement, either immediately or coming up. It was proving quite difficult to recruit new transcribers and train them up fast enough. Some of the software that was available was starting to be a bit out of date and a bit cumbersome, and or it didn't meet international requirements. So it would do one format really well for, say, one country, one set of continents, but not the other formats that were needed elsewhere. And also the music file standards were, there was a standard music XML, but it was very variable. The contents of music XML file then were just unreliable. So if you were trying to listen to that or use that to create music Braille, you couldn't reliably produce a good score from that. So they approached, a group of them came together under the DAISY umbrella and said, we really need to do something about this. And because of my background in usability and research and standards work, and I had a knowledge of accessible formats, and I knew most of the main players, it was a job that I was very happy to accept.
Brilliant. So there's a lot of facets to this, and there's probably a lot we could talk about, because I know you're sort of working with music publishers. You're working obviously with the software platforms, but you're also working with end users to make an environment, I suppose, accessible where people can access and create music, and I suppose not just create music, but can create music by inputting Braille, which I was like particularly interested in. Be able to type something in a Braille display in Braille music and have it play back.
That's right. Of all the tools that we're and the work that we're doing in the Music Braille project, I think that one is going to be the one that users get most excited about in their hands, in one sense, because with a software tool being developed in Vietnam called Sayo My Braille, that's going to be the Music Braille conversion engine, which will connect to MuseScore, and that's the mainstream music notation editor. Now, we're working with both of those development teams. For MuseScore, we want the mainstream tool to be fully accessible. We want it to output music XML that contains the right tags for accessible reading. And we want every area of the interface to be accessible from the keyboard. So that's the work we're doing with them. And with Sayo My Braille, they've started almost from scratch. They had a Braille conversion software already, and now they've been adding, with our funding, they've been adding music Braille conversion elements to it. And because they're starting from scratch, they've got a slight advantage in trying to modify an existing tool, that they know what they need to build from our requirements, and they can build it to suit all international users. They don't have to try and modify something that was built for a slightly different purpose. So they're making enormous developments, and they're releasing new versions to try all the time. Now, the really cool thing about Sayo My Braille with MuseScore is that it's going to be totally free.
Wow.
And that's going to be really important for lots of people, particularly in developing countries or for the working at home. And because it's a mainstream technology, it will mean that people can use the same tool that their sighted friends and musicians and teachers are using to create and edit and play and export music in different formats, whether they're blind or sighted or partially sighted, come to that. So I think that's the thing that end users are going to feel most excited about. And the other stuff that we're doing is to try and improve the quality of music braille out there to enhance how blindness agencies can share files between each other, and how files can be created more accessibly from publishers, and how you can get hold of files from online collections more easily.
Okay, so there's a lot there. Where are we with the, let's talk about the SciMi Braille and the MuseScore bit maybe first, because it might be the bit that's of most interest to people listening to this. Where are we with that in terms of people being able to get their hands on it?
Well, they're both available freely online right now, and every new release is notified. So people can get their hands on MuseScore by going to https://musescore.org. And to get your hands on SciMi Braille, that's slightly longer. You might be better just to Google SciMi Braille. But the full address is https://www.sciMiCenter.org. And that's SAOMAICENTER.org. And you'll find /EN/SMSoft/SMB. And if all of that sounds really tricky to remember, just come to the Music Braille pages of the DAISY Consortium, which is much easier to remember because it's www.daisy.org/music-braille. And from the homepage, you'll find links to all of the tools.
Yeah, there's loads.
And where to get hold.
There's loads of great stuff on that website. So just in terms of, for somebody who might want to set this up, you would presumably install MuseScore and then add the SciMi Braille as a plugin? Is that how it operates?
Well, it will do. It will do. So at the moment, the tools are separate. And for the next 6 months and a bit longer, SciMi will be building the connectivity between MuseScore and SMB. So the end goal is to be able to have a single user experience. So if you're in MuseScore and you want to be able to input in Braille or output in Braille or view your score on your Braille display and in speech and in sound and on the screen, you'll be able to do that within MuseScore. And if you're in SMB and you're creating files or you're converting files and then you want to switch into MuseScore for editing the notes, then you can do the two things from each direction. But yeah, you'll be able to do it in the MuseScore notation tool and from your Braille line as well.
And this really is incredible, isn't it? Because it's all free, as you said, and like people have never been able to do something like this in this level of detail before.
No, and we all have very high hopes for this. We've got a good development team, and we've got lots of people who are contributing Music Braille expertise about what it should do and how it's going to do it for different international formattings and usability standards.
Okay, just maybe on the other parts of the project, just maybe briefly, how is the mainstream music publishing world responding to this? Because it sounds great if it all works together, but I guess, you know, publishing and different file formats and getting all that stuff cleanly into a system whereby blind people can access it, is that tricky for you guys?
It's taken some time, but I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. The W3C, who look after the web standards, have been very receptive to our feedback about how to improve music XML for our purposes. A lot of the tags and the requirements we've requested, they've built in gradually. So I would say that music XML, when it's produced well, does lend itself much more easily now to conversion into Music Braille. We've also done some work with the tools themselves. So Sibelius, Finale, MuseScore in particular, to make sure that when they export files from their native format into Music XML, they export all the right stuff. Mm-hmm. Because that was a problem in the past, that lots of tags were not being exported correctly or in full, which meant there were huge gaps and we didn't know what elements were what elements. So that was very hard to represent in Music Braille. But those things have come together now. Music publishers are often asked to supply scores in accessible formats or for conversion. And of course, blindness agencies typically are asked to then convert them and into accessible formats. Now, we've got a proposal for music setters and engravers who actually create the music that publishers then print and distribute, that if they follow our guidance on accessibility when they're setting the music itself, then when they export them in the tools, it will contain beautiful tags that we need for conversion. Lots of the publishers are very warm to this idea. They want to be doing good things for the accessibility community. And if we can suggest this as a cost-effective and efficient way of getting something into their workflow, I'm hoping they'll bite our hands off.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also makes their job easier, I suppose.
I hope so. Certainly, we've got colleagues presenting from the ABRSM, the exam body of music, and they talk about how they have to field a lot of inquiries about accessible formats. And at the coalface where they're receiving these inquiries, it would be much better for them to be able to say, here's a beautifully marked up XML score, which you can do stuff with, rather than, oh, you need to get a print copy in.
Yeah.
So lots of music publishers handle these inquiries differently. ABRSM have a very good reputation for producing accessible formats. So we're going to hopefully use them as an example of what can be done.
So I suppose, Sarah, the other maybe big question is that when the project finishes, because this is a project, I think, is it 3 years you guys are going to be doing?
Yeah,
doing
we've this? Got till the end of this year and then a little bit into 23 to finish the SAOMI stuff.
So let's say after that, 6 months later, there's a MuseScore update. Will SAOMI and MuseScore continue to kind of collaborate outside of what you guys have set up for them?
Yes, I believe so. MuseScore is very highly committed to accessibility. And in fact, a lot of the changes they've implemented in MuseScore 3, which are out now, take us a long way to accessibility. But they have rewritten the entire engine, the accessibility engine, which will be released later in the year for MuseScore 4. So users will find quite a big step in accessibility improvements into MuseScore 4. And they've always been committed to accessibility, actually, and I have high hopes that that will continue. And the same with SAOMI, they are deeply committed to accessible format tool development. They need to continue to promote it, build it. They've got science and maths as well, and as well as a normal Braille converter. So they want that to be a really effective Braille conversion engine for all sorts of people around the world. So they have an interest in keeping it going too. And the one I haven't mentioned particularly yet is the Make Braille tool from DZB Leeson in Germany. And this is an automated conversion tool really aimed at transcription houses. It's not really for end users particularly to use. And that is available from DZB Leeson in Germany under license. And again, they have an interest in making that successful at the end of the project too. So we've supported 2 years of development with Make Braille. That now caters for bar of bar and section by section formatting, so worldwide usage. It's got loads of country requirements built in. So it will take a high quality music XML file as an input file or a well marked up scanned print score in Capella. And as long as those two files are well marked up, it will convert it automatically and return you a Braille ready file.
Wow. That's so, again, for a transcription, for somebody who needs access to a particular piece of music or score, that's going to make life much easier.
I think it will. But again, it's really aimed at transcribers rather than end users.
Yeah.
Because you need to make sure you've really got a good marked up score. So if we end up, which is what I'd love to see, is a collection of quality marked up scores, there's absolutely no reason why a blind user couldn't download a quality score and put it through the automated tool. Yeah. No reason at all. And that's partly some of the work we're doing with the online collections of music Braille files. So this is things like ABC, Bookshare and NLS, Onfay. Anyone who's got a really big online collection of music scores, we've brought them together and we're agreeing, quite surprisingly, we're agreeing some harmonisation of those metadata fields. So when you look for Beethoven Moonlight Sonata, you might find it, or you might not currently. You might find the version for piano, which you'd hope, or you might find it for flute. Mm-hmm. You may find it with different layouts and formatting, but you might not know until you open every single file. So this harmonisation work we're doing with online collections should hopefully make it much, much more efficient for agencies to look for scores that blind users are asking for and get them into their hands much more quickly.
Are you looking for users, people who might be interested listening to this, who might want to test some of this stuff out? Are you guys looking for feedback at the moment?
I think so. For anybody who's interested in looking at MuseScore or SayOhMy Braille in particular, I definitely think have a look on our project webpage at daisy.org/music-braille and follow the links to the tools. You've got to bear in mind that MuseScore is a properly functioning tool, but SayOhMy is still in development. So feedback is good, but don't expect it to be a fully functioning music braille conversion tool yet. Yeah. Although we are extremely impressed with the development they've done so far. It's really cracking.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. And I think, you know, I've seen some presentations on your website and some of the demonstrations are incredible. So if it's anything like what it's been shown to be, it's going to be great. Sarah, we really appreciate you coming on to talk to us today, but also appreciate the work that you're doing to make Music Braille, I guess, live into the future very successfully in this ever-changing world of technology that we find ourselves in. So thanks a million for chatting to us and hope to keep in touch and chat to you again soon.
That's great. Thanks so much, Stuart.
And many thanks to Dr. Sarah Morley-Wilkins. Thoroughly enjoyed catching up with Sarah on the show today. And Sarah was telling me after we recorded that piece, by the way, that she's a singer as well. So she does have a real understanding of the need to ensure that music that we as visually impaired people want to access is readily available to us, and indeed readily available for people who want to make that music accessible to our community. So thank you, Sarah. We'd love to stay in touch, and we will, to keep an eye on that project. But that's all we have on this edition of the podcast. We're back soon. Until then, enjoy the sunshine, drink plenty of water, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight & Sound Technology. Thank you for listening, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.